because everyone just sat around waiting to find out what was going on.
I've been told that I'm free to deal with you.
There was no cringe to the man tonight. He had gotten a little backbone somewhere.
I'm prepared to discuss the object you seek if I receive absolute assurances that the Black Company will never do the Daughter of Night any harm.
Never is an awful long time. You're out of luck.
I got up. Goblin's been wanting to work on her just forever. I'm going to let him pull a few fingers off now to show you we have no conscience or remorse where certain old enemies are concerned.
I offered you what you asked.
You offered me a delayed death warrant. If I agree to that kind of nonsense, 10 years from now the black-hearted witch will start poisoning us and we'll be stuck with the disastrous choice of keeping our word and accepting destruction or breaking our word and seeing our reputation destroyed. I'm certain you don't know much northern mythology. There's an old religion up there that tells how a leading god allowed himself to be slain so his family would no longer be bound by a promise he made foolishly to an enemy who wore it like a turtle shell.
Narion stared at me, cold as a cobra, waiting for me to crack. And I did, a little, because I bothered to explain. One Eye has told me 100 times that I should not explain.
I just don't want that artifact badly enough to commit my people to the level of vulnerability that you're asking. In particular, I won't undertake commitments for those of us who are buried. On the other hand, maybe you'd like to undertake commitments whereby, assuming you get out of this alive, you guarantee never to be a pain in the company neck ever again. Whereby you agree to go to the captain and the lieutenant and beg her forgiveness for stealing their child.
The very suggestion appalled the living saint of the deceivers.
She is the child of Kina, the daughter of Night. Those two are irrelevant.
Evidently we don't have anything to talk about yet.
I'll send you a few fingers for breakfast. I went to see if Surendranath Santaraksita was being a good fellow in pursuing the tasks I had suggested he could use to help overcome the tedium of his captivity. To my surprise, I found him hard at work, with old Baladitya assisting, translating what I had presumed to be the first volume of the Lost Annals. They had a whole stack of sheets already done.
"Dorabi," Master Santaraksita said. "Excellent! Your friend, the foreigner, keeps telling us we can't have any more real vellum when we're done with these last few sheets. He wants us to use those ridiculous bark books they still employ out in the swamps."
Before there were modern paper and vellum and parchment, there was bark. I do not know what kind of tree it came from, just that the inner bark was removed carefully, treated and pressed and used to write on. To make a book, you stacked the bark sheets, drilled a hole down through the upper left-hand corner of the stack, then bound everything together with a cord of ribbon or length of very light chain. Bondo Trang would favor bark because it was both cheap, traditional, and hardier than animal products. I'll talk to him.
There's nothing earth-shaking in there, Dorabi.
My name is Sleepy.
Sleepy isn't a name. It's a disease or a misfortune.
I prefer Dorabi. I'll use Dorabi.
Use whatever you like. I'll know who you're talking to. I read a couple of sheets. He was right. This is tedious stuff. This looks like an account book.
That's what it is, mainly. The things you want to know are just the things the writer assumes any reader of his own time would know already. He wasn't writing for the ages or even for another generation. He was keeping track of horseshoe nails, lance shafts, and saddles. All he has to say about their battle is that the lower-ranking officers and non-commissioned officers failed to demonstrate an adequate enthusiasm for appropriating weapons lost or abandoned by the defeated enemy, preferring to wait till the next dawn to begin gleaning. As a consequence, stragglers and the local peasantry manage to scavenge all the best.
I notice he doesn't bother to name a single name, person, or place. I had begun reading while the master talked. I could listen and read at the same time, even though I was a woman.
He does give mileage and dates. The context suggests the appropriate systems of measure. It can be figured out. But what I've already started to wonder, Doraby, is why we've all been deathly afraid of these people all our lives. This book gives us no reason to be afraid. This book is about a troop of crabby little men who marched off somewhere they didn't want to go for reasons they didn't understand, fully believing that their unstated mission would last only several weeks or, at most, a few months. Then they would be able to go home. But the months piled into years, and the years into generations, and still they didn't really know.
The material also suggested we needed to revise our old belief that the free companies exploded into the world at the same time, in a vast orgy of fire and bloodshed. The only other company mentioned was noted to have returned years before the Black Company marched, and in fact several senior company non-coms had served as private soldiers in that earlier unnamed band.
"I can see it," I grumbled.
"We're going to translate these things, find out all sorts of things, and not be an inch closer to understanding anything," Santaraxita said.
"That's much more exciting than a meeting with the Badralok, Doraby."
Then Baladitya spoke for the first time.
"Do we have to starve to death here, Doraby?"
"Nobody brought you anything to eat?"
"No."
"I'll just see about that. Don't be startled if you hear me shouting. I hope you enjoy fish and rice." I took care of that, then hid in my corner for a while. I was feeling a little depressed after having seen Master Santaraxita's work. I suppose that sometimes I invest too much in my goals, then suffer a correspondingly huge disappointment when things do not work out. Chapter 39 Tobo woke me.
"How can you sleep, Sleepy?"
"I guess I must be tired. What do you want?"
"The Protector has finally started to grumble about the Radisha. Dad wants you to come keep track yourself, so you don't have to record anything third-hand."
At the moment, my name felt entirely appropriate. I just wanted to lie down on my pallet and dream about finding another kind of life. Trouble was, I had been doing this since I was 14. I did not know anything else, unless Master Santaraxita was willing to let bygones be bygones and take me back at the library. Right after we buried Soulcatcher in a 50-foot-deep hole we filled in with boiling lead. I dragged a stool in between Sara and One Eye, leaning forward with my elbows on the table and stared into the mist where Mergen appeared to report when it suited him. One Eye was fussing at Mergen, even though Mergen was away. I said, "Anybody would think you were worried about Goblin, the way you're carrying on."
"Of course I'm worried about Goblin, little girl. The runt borrowed my transeidetic locutor before he went up there this morning. Not to mention he still owes me several thousand pice for... Well, he owes me a bunch of money."
My recollection had it the other way round. One Eye always owed everyone, even when he was doing well, and several thousand pice is not exactly a fortune, a pay being a tiny seed of such uniform weight that it is used as a measure for gems and precious metals. It takes almost 2,000 of them to equal a northern ounce. Since One Eye had not specified gold or silver, the standard assumption would be that he had meant coin-grade copper. In other words, not very much. In other words, still, he was worried about his best friend, but he could not say so, because he had a century-long history of reviling the man in public. If there was any such magical instrument as a transeidetic locutor, One Eye invented it an hour before he loaned it to Goblin. He muttered,
"That ugly little turd gets himself killed. I'm going to strangle him. He can't leave me holding the bag on."
He realized he was thinking out loud. Sarah and I both made mental notes to investigate the bag metaphor. It sounded like there were business plans afoot. Secret plans. Surprise, surprise. Mergen materialized practically nose to nose with me. He murmured,
"Soulcatcher is out of patience. A flock of crows just brought the news from Semke. She's in a complete black mood. She says she's going into the Radish's anger chamber after her if she doesn't come out in the next 2 minutes. "Who's Goblin?"
One Eye barked.
"Hiding," Mergen replied. "Waiting for sunrise."
He was not going to try leaving during the night, the way we had planned originally. Soulcatcher had loosed her shadows just to punish Taglios for irritating her. We had a few traps out, randomly distributed through likely neighborhoods, but I did not expect to catch anything. I figured our luck along those lines was about used up. Goblin was armed with a shadow-repellent amulet left over from the Shadow Master Wars, but did not know if it was any good anymore. Being bright and full of forethought, it had not occurred to any of us to test it on real shadows while we had some in stock. You cannot think of everything, but you should make the effort. One of the royal guards actually tried to stop the protector when her patience failed, and she went to dig the Radisha out of her hideaway. He went down without a sound, stricken by a casual touch. He would recover eventually. The protector was not feeling particularly vindictive for the moment. She crashed through the door of the anger chamber and howled in frustration before the pieces finished falling.
"Where is she?"
The power of her rage wilted the onlookers. A sub-assistant chamberlain, bowing almost double, continuing to bob and get lower, whined,
"She was in there, oh great one!"
Someone else insisted,
"We never saw her leave. She has to be in there."
From somewhere echoing, almost as if coming from some distance in time as well as place, there was the sound of brief laughter. Soulcatcher turned slowly, her stare a cruel spear.
"Come closer. Tell me again."
Her voice was compelling, chilling, terrible. She stared into one pair of eyes after another, making full use of the fear so many had that she could read the deepest secrets in their minds. None of the Radish's people changed their stories.
"Out of here. Out of this whole apartment. Something happened here. I want no distractions. I want nothing disturbed."
She turned again, slowly extending a sorceress's senses to feel the shape of the past. It was more difficult than she anticipated. She had been loafing for too long, falling out of practice and getting out of shape. The remote laughter sounded again for an instant, seeming just a touch closer.
"You!"
Soulcatcher snapped at a fat woman, one of the housekeepers.
"What are you doing?"
"Ma'am?"
Narita was barely able to croak her response. In a moment, she would lose control of her bladder.
"You just pushed something into your left sleeve, something off the altar."
A single white candle, almost consumed, still burned in the tiny shrine to ancestors.
"Come here."
Soulcatcher extended her gloved right hand. Narita could not resist. She stepped toward the dark woman, so trim and evilly feminine in her leather. Idly, Narita hated her for maintaining that sleek body.
"Give it to me."
Reluctantly, Narita removed the gangisha from her sleeve. She began to babble about not wanting her friend to get into trouble, making no sense at all, failing to realize that if she had not tried to conceal the gangisha, the protector would have overlooked it entirely. Soulcatcher stared at the little clay figurine.
The cleaning woman. It belongs to the cleaning woman. Where is she?
Far mocking laughter.
She's a day employee, ma'am. She comes in from outside.
Where does she live?
I don't know, ma'am. I don't think anybody does. Nobody ever asked. It never mattered.
One of the other staffers offered.
She was a good worker.
Soulcatcher continued to examine the Gangisha.
Something's odd here. Now it does matter. To me. Find out.
How?
I don't care. Be creative. But do it.
Soulcatcher hurled the clay figurine to the floor. Shards flew in every direction. A wisp of a ghost of darkness curled up and stood like a rampant cobra a foot high for an instant. Then it struck at the protector. The staffers squealed and began trampling one another, trying to get away. They had not seen a shadow before, but they knew what a shadow could do. The laughter was closer now, louder and lasting longer. Soulcatcher offered a convincing squeal of surprise and fright, like a young woman who had just stepped on a snake. Her apparel and the handful of generalized protective spells that always surrounded her saved her from becoming a victim of her own cruelest weapon. Even so, for a minute she was like a child swatting mosquitoes as the shadow enthusiastically strove to terminate their relationship. Failing to reclaim control of the shadow, Soulcatcher destroyed it. The necessity told her that a pretty clever mind had prepared it, probably hoping that she would be too angry to pay close attention for just that instant needed.
Woman! Come back here!
The protector extended a hand in the direction Narita had fled. Somehow a single strand of the woman's hair had become entwined through Soulcatcher's fingers. Those fingers shimmered momentarily. The air became charged. The other staffers whimpered and wished they had even had the nerve to try to run. Narita reappeared slowly, taking short zombie steps.
Here,
Soulcatcher said. She pointed at a spot on the anger chamber floor.
The rest of you, go away quickly.
She did not have to add any encouragement.
Fat woman! Tell me everything about the creature who always carried the Gangisha.
I've told you everything I know,
Narita whined.
No, you have not. Start talking. She may have kidnapped the Radisha.
Soulcatcher regretted mentioning that the instant the words left her helmet. The laughter sounded like it was coming from just out in the hallway, a diabolic snickering. The protector's head twitched toward that direction. She sensed no threat. It could wait a minute.
Her name is Min Subradil.
It took Narita only another 30 seconds to relate everything she knew about Min Subradil, her daughter Shikandini, and her sister-in-law Sawa.
Thank you,
Soulcatcher snarled.
You've been most unhelpful, and for that I shall provide an appropriate reward.
She gripped the fat woman's throat in her right hand. Squeezed. As Narita went limp and laughter sounded once more, there might have been a word there, too. Ardath? Or perhaps Silath? Or might it have been? No matter. Soulcatcher would not listen to that. Just to the mockery. She hurled herself toward the sound, but when she burst into the hallway, there was nothing to see. She started to call for guards, for Greys, but recalled that she had just slain the one person other than herself who knew for sure that the Radisha had disappeared. The Radisha had shut herself away from the world. That was all anybody really needed to know. The princess could live forever right there in her anger chamber. She did not need to venture forth ever again. She had her good friend the Protector to handle the boring chores of managing her empire for her. More laughter, apparently from nowhere and everywhere. Soulcatcher stamped away. This was not over yet. A white crow dropped out of the murk near the ceiling of the hallway, flapped heavily, landed beside the fat woman. It held its beak poised beneath her nostrils momentarily, as though checking for breath. Then it flapped away suddenly, sharp ears having caught the sound of a stealthy footfall. A shivering Jarl Barundandi eased into the chamber. He knelt beside the woman. He took her hand. He remained there, tears streaking his cheeks, until he heard the protector returning, arguing with herself in a variety of voices. Chapter 40 "What do you know about that?" I said to Sarah. "Narita tried to cover for you, and then Barundandi got all broken up about what happened to her." Sarah waggled a finger. She was thinking. "Morgan, what do you know about that white crow?" Morgan hesitated before responding.
"Nothing."
Which meant he was telling an approximate truth, but he had some definite ideas. Sarah and I both knew him that well. Sarah said, "Suppose you tell me what you think is going on then." Morgan faded away. "What the heck is that?" I snapped at One Eye. "You were supposed to rig this thing so he has to do what he's told."
"He does, most of the time. He could be carrying out the previous instruction."
But the old fool sounded to me like he had no idea what Morgan was doing. Soulcatcher worked quickly, then summoned the staff members who had been present when she had broken into the anger chamber.
"The continuing excitement was too much for this poor woman. I've tried to resurrect her, but her soul refuses to respond. She must be happy where she is now."
There were no witnesses to contradict her, though remote laughter mocked her.
"I did find the Radisha. She'd fallen asleep. She has retreated into the anger chamber, and does not wish to be disturbed again."
"Not for a long time.
I should have honored her wishes before. We would have avoided this disaster."
She indicated the fat woman. Even the staffers who had looked into the anger chamber earlier and had seen nothing had to admit that someone was inside now, moving around angrily, muttering the way the Radisha did, and looking very much like the Radisha in glimpses caught through cracks in the poorly restored door. The protector suggested,
"Let's all turn in for the night.
Tomorrow we'll begin repairing the mess I made." She watched her audience intently, feeling for anyone who could cause trouble. The staff departed. They were relieved just to be away from Soulcatcher. Soulcatcher sat down and thought. There was no way to tell what was going through her mind till she began muttering in a committee of voices. Then it was clear that she was trying to work out the mechanics of the abduction. She seemed willing to give considerable weight to the possibility that the Radisha had stage-managed the whole thing herself. A very suspicious woman, the Protector. One by one she found and questioned each of the people who had dealt with Min Subradil, Sawa, and Shikandini, beginning with Jarl Barundandi, and finishing with Del Mukarji. The man Barundandi usually trusted to collect the kickbacks from the outside workers.
"You will cease that," the Protector informed Mukarji. "You and anyone else involved. If it happens again, I will put you into a glass ball and hang you above the service postern with your whole body turned inside out. I'll add a couple of imps to feed on your entrails for the 6 months it will take you to die. Do you understand?"
Del Mukarji understood the threat just fine. But he had no idea whatsoever why the Protector would want to interfere with his livelihood. The Protector had a passion about corruption. In time, the Protector reasoned that 3 women had come into the palace and 3 women had gone away again. It seemed very likely that the 3 women who had departed were not the 3 women who had entered, and no one the Radisha's size had gone out since, which meant that someone with some answers might still be inside. Chuckling wickedly, Soulcatcher began to look for evidence that someone had slipped off into the untenanted wilds of the palace. Goblin was asleep on a dusty old bed. Occasionally his snores would turn to sneezes and snorts when too much dust got into his nostrils.
A squawk had him bouncing up so suddenly he almost collapsed from lightheadedness. He spun around. He saw nothing. He heard soft laughter, then a bizarre squawking voice that sounded almost familiar.
"Wake up! Wake up! She is coming!"
"Who's coming? Who's talking?" There was no response. He did not feel any strong sorceress presence. It was a puzzle. Goblin had a good idea who might be coming, though. Not many women were likely to be hunting him here in the middle of the night. He was ready. His little pack was carrying the two books Sleepy most wanted to save. Taking all three was physically impossible. His traps were set. All he had to do was move on into the now empty part of the palace that had been occupied by the Black Company back when its staff and leadership had been quartered there. There were ways to get out unnoticed. He and One Eye had found them in olden times. The trouble was, he had no desire to be on the streets after dark, amulet or no. Soulcatcher gave up most of her sense of touch when she chose to wrap every inch of her body in leather and helmet. She never noted the touch of, or resistance of, the strand of spider silk stretched across the corridor. But she did have a marvelously well-developed sense for personal danger. Before the Gongisha hit the floor, she was moving to defend herself. It was such reflexes that made it possible for creatures like her, her sister Lady, and the Howler to have survived for so long. This time she had the proper controlling spells ready, hung about her, sparkling like spanking new tools. The shadow trapped inside the figurine barely got its bearings before it was attacked itself, seized and constrained, then twisted and crushed down into a whining, seething ball completely enclosed inside one of the protector's gloved hands. A merry young voice called,
"You'll have to do better than that!"
Soulcatcher continued to move forward, amused by the idea of tossing the shadow back into someone's face. The trail began to grow indistinct, then disorienting. Experimentation showed her the cause was external. The corridor had been strewn with cobwebs of spells, so subtle that even she might not have noticed had she just been hurrying along.
"Oh, you clever devils! How long has this been here? Ah, a very long time indeed, I see. You were still in favor when you started this. Have you been hiding here all along? I certainly couldn't find you in the city if you never were out there."
In another voice entirely, she asked,
"What have we here? It smells like somebody very frightened is hiding behind this door. And he didn't even bother to lock it. How stupid does he think I am?"
She shoved the door with her toe. A clay gongisha plummeted from its place atop the door. Soulcatcher giggled. She was even quicker to recapture this shadow, which she squeezed down inside her other hand. Then she pushed into the room. There was no one there anymore. That was easy to sense. But there was a curious feel to the place. It demanded an investigation. She generated a small light, stood in place, turned slowly while she read the history of the room for subtle clues. A great deal had happened there. Much of the recent history of the Black Company had been shaped in that room. It retained a strong smell of old fear she identified eventually with the long-dead Taglian court wizard Smoke. All this she debated with herself in a committee of argumentative voices. In the end, she seemed entertained. Most of the time, life was a great entertainment for Soulcatcher.
"And what do we have here?"
Something with inked characters on it peeped from beneath a dusty old bed where someone had been lying until minutes ago. Thoughtlessly, she reached for the object, opened her hand to grasp it.
"Damn! That was stupid!"
She wasted several minutes regaining control of the shadow. It was very agile this time. She stuffed it into the hand restraining the other. The two were extremely unhappy in there. One thing shadows seemed to hate more than the living was other shadows.
What Soulcatcher had found was a book with half the pages torn out. It was alone.
So, this is what became of those. I was never quite sure who took them. I wonder if they got any use out of them.
As she was about to depart, the Protector glanced at the damaged book once more.
Been taking these pages a few at a time. That would take a long time. Which means they've been coming in and out of the palace for a long time.
Which therefore suggests that the Radisha didn't engineer her own disappearance.
Oh well.
She's gone.
It amounts to the same thing.
Let's catch our little rat and let him play with our little friends.
Unlike Soulcatcher, Goblin could not see in the dark. But he had the advantage of knowing where he was going. He did manage to stay ahead, and did slide out of one of the old hidden exits. There was a little light outside from a fragment of moon peeking through scurrying young clouds trying to catch up with Mother Storm. Goblin laid the last Gangisha on the cobblestones in plain sight, then ran. The books on his back beat against him, pounding the breath out of him. He muttered something about the good news being that it was all downhill from here. The bad news was that it was dark out. There were shadows on the prowl, and he was not so sure about the quality of his 15-year-old amulet. He had to hope that in a city this vast, none of the handful of night stalkers would cross his path while he was huffing and puffing and concentrating on staying ahead of Soulcatcher. It did not occur to him that she might have recovered the shadows he had left in ambush, that they might be after him too. Soulcatcher stepped into the night, close enough behind to glimpse a flicker of her quarry vanishing into the shadows between structures across the open area outside the palace. She spied the abandoned Gangisha and several other small items that looked like they had been dropped in the rush to get away. She tossed her two shadows into the air and stomped her heel down on the clay figurine at the same time. This would set a pack of small deaths on the little man's heels. By now, she was reasonably certain that she was chasing the wizard called Goblin. She screamed. The pain in her heel was beyond anything she had ever experienced. As she collapsed, trying to will her throat to seal itself, she watched three ferociously bright balls of light streak into the night in pursuit of the shadows she had sent to claim Goblin. Still fighting the incredible pain, she produced a dagger and used its tip to dip another fireball out of her heel. Already it had eaten all the way to the bone and in, and had done some damage as high as her ankle, despite her normal protection.
"I'll be crippled," she snarled. "He lulled me. He set me up so I'd think this would be another easy shadow trap."
None of her voices were amused now.
"Clever little bastard will pay for this."
The fallen fireball burned its way into the cobblestones. Still ignoring her pain, Soulcatcher tried to stand. She discovered that she was not going to be able to walk. She was, however, not losing any blood. The fireball had cauterized her wound.
"My beloved sister, if you weren't already dead, I'd kill you for inventing those damned things."
Laughter echoed down the ramparts of the palace. A flicker of white glided after Goblin.
"I think I'll kill somebody anyway."
Soulcatcher made her way toward the palace entrance on hands and knees, muttering continuously. She had isolated her pain in a remote corner of her mind, and was now concentrating on being angry about what this odyssey was doing to her beautiful leather pants and gloves. Chapter 41.
"Can you believe that?" I asked. She was as mad about ruining her outfit as she was about losing Goblin and getting hurt.
One Eye chuckled, immensely relieved because Goblin had gotten away.
"I believe it."
"What? You too?"
"It's a northern thing. Everything she wears is leather. You people are all goofy about stuff like that. She probably has to fly 5,000 miles every time she wants a new pair of pants. Means she's really got to watch her waist and behind. Unlike some." "Hey! No punching!" We're all on the same side here.
Do you believe this little pervert? I asked Sara.
You go ask Swan.
One Eye showed me his tooth. The one he was about to lose.
He'll tell you the woman's got her good points.
Sara remained all business.
What are we going to do if she just pretends the Radisha is all right? How many people normally see the princess? Not many, I know. And there's no Privy Council anymore. We've seen to them. Except for Mogaba.
We've got to see about him, too,
One Eye grumbled.
Let's not overreach. The great general would be harder to take than the others were.
I mused. She wouldn't actually have to keep the Radisha in hiding very long. Maybe 2 weeks, while she builds a new council, handpicked to woof yes, ma'am, and how high, when she tells them to jump. One Eye blew out a bushel of air.
She's right. Maybe we should have considered that.
I said,
I did consider it. Having the Radisha under our control looked like the best deal. We can trot her out any time Soulcatcher gets too bizarre. And Soulcatcher will realize that. She won't let temptation carry her too far. Not until she sorts us out.
She will do everything she can to find and recover the Radisha, Sara said.
I'm sure of that. Which means we need to hurry up and get out of the city.
I said, I have one little thing to do before I go. Don't anybody wait on me. Murgan, be a pal and put a little real effort into finding out about this other white crow. I did not await his response. Now that Goblin seemed safe, I was eager to interview our newest prisoner. Someone had taken some effort to make the Radisha comfortable. Nor had she been forced into a cage. Presumably, One Eye had provided a sampler of choker spells. I studied her while she remained unaware of my presence. She had had a formidable reputation when first the company had come to Taglios. She had put up a good struggle, too, but the years had worn her down. She looked old and tired and defeated now. I stepped forward.
Have they treated you well so far, Radisha?
She showed me a weak smile. There was a twinkle both of anger and sarcasm in her eye. I know. It's not the palace. But I've enjoyed worse, including chains and no roof at all.
And animal hides?
I've lived here for the last 6 years. You get used to it. It had been longer than that, but I was not taking time to be precise.
Why?
Water sleeps, Radisha. Water sleeps. You were expecting us. We had to come. At that point, it became completely real to her. Her eyes grew big.
I've seen you before.
Many times. Lately around the palace. Once upon a time, long ago, around the palace also, with the standard bearer.
You're the idiot.
Am I? Perhaps one of us... She began to grow angry then. I told her, that won't help. But if you need to rage to feel better, consider this. The Protector is covering up your disappearance already. The one person who knew for sure, not counting us villains, of course, is dead already. There'll be more deaths, and you'll begin making the most outrageous pronouncements from the anonymity of your anger chamber. And in 6 months, the Protector will be so solidly in control, behind her greys and those who think they can profit from an alliance with her, that you won't matter anymore. As long as Soulcatcher could come to an accommodation with Mogaba. I did not mention that. The Radisha began to speak quite rudely of her ally. I let her run for a while, then offered another slogan.
All their days are numbered.
What the hell does that mean?
Sooner or later we're going to get everyone who injured us. You're right. It's not really sane, but it's the way we are. You've seen it happening lately. Only the Protector and the Great General are still running free. All their days are numbered. The reality sank in a little deeper. She was a captive. She did not know where. She did not know what was going to happen. She did not know that her captors were willing to pursue their grudges to insane lengths, just as they had promised they would before she made the mistake of letting herself be seduced by Soulcatcher's deadly promises. "You have no designated heir, do you?" The change of direction startled her. "What?" "There isn't any clear-cut line of succession." Again, "What?" "At the moment, I don't just hold you hostage. I have the entire future of Taglios and the Taglian territories firmly under my thumb. You don't have a child. Your brother has no child."
"I'm too old for that now."
"Your brother isn't. And he is still alive." I left her then. To think, her mouth hanging open. I considered seeing Narion sing again. Decided I would seem too eager. I was too tired, anyway. You do not treat with a deceiver without full command of your faculties. Sleep was the lover whose arms I needed to wrap me up. Chapter 42. I was playing Tonk with Spiff and Jojo and Kendo Cutter, an interesting mix. At least three of us took our religion somewhat seriously. Jojo's real name was Cho Dai Cho. He was Nguyen Bo, and in theory, One Eye's bodyguard. One Eye did not want a bodyguard. Jojo did not want to be a bodyguard, so they did not see much of one another. And the rest of us saw as little of Jojo as we did of Uncle Doge. Jojo complained,
"You're just ganging up on the dumb swamp boy, I know."
I said, "Me getting cahoots with a heretic and an unbeliever?"
"You'll ambush them after you finish picking my bones."
I had been having an unusual run of luck. Everybody resents it when their favorite mark gets lucky. I said, "I can't get used to this not having to go to work." Jojo discarded a six I needed to fill in to the inside of a five-card straight. Maybe this is my day. "Be a good time to get out and find you a man, then. Goblin. You're still alive. As mad as Soulcatcher was last night, I figured she would have you for a midnight snack before you got halfway home." Goblin gave me his big frog grin. "She's gonna walk funny for a while. I couldn't believe she actually stomped on it." His grin faded. "I've been thinking. Maybe nailing her that way was a mistake. I could have led her somewhere where we could have got her in a crossfire." She would have been looking for that. In fact, her suspecting something like that was probably one reason she didn't keep chasing you. "You want to sit in?" All three of my companions glowered. Goblin was not One Eye, but they did not trust him a bit. They knew with the confidence of ignorance that Goblin was just more clever when he cheated. The fact that his history was one of losing more than he won was just a part of the cover-up. You might have noticed that the human animal is fond of forming and clinging to prejudices, remaining their steadfast curator in the face of all reason and contradiction. "Not this time." Goblin could take a hint. He would also take them some other way sometime and laugh himself silly behind his hand. And it would serve them right. "Got work to do. I'm already getting complaints from everybody about a ghost that was all over the warehouse last night. Got to scope it out." I had a losing hand, or foot. I tossed it in. "He's making me feel guilty for loafing." I collected my winnings.
"You can't quit now," Kendo grumbled.
"You proved your point. Women can't play cards. I stay here much longer. I won't have a copper left to my name." "Then you wouldn't get a birthday present this year."
"Didn't get one last year either."
"I must have played Tonk with you then, too. So many of you do it. I have a hard time keeping track of which ones of you guys keep beating up on me." They all grumbled now. Goblin said, Maybe I can sit in, just for a hand or two.
That's all right. You better help Sleepy, or Sleepy can help you.
The grumbling stopped till we were out of earshot. Goblin chuckled, so did I. He said,
We ought to get married.
I'm too old for you. See if Chandra Gokhale can fix you up.
Aren't those two like a couple of starving rats?
Gokhale and Drupada were at one another constantly. Their squabbles had not yet devolved into anything physical, only because they had been warned in the strongest of terms that the winner of any fight would be punished terribly.
Maybe one of them will kill and eat the other one, I said.
If we're lucky.
You're a dreamer for sure.
What's your opinion on this ghost? He shrugged. You know it's the girl, don't you?
I'm pretty sure.
You think she's going through the same thing Mergen did when he started? Falling through time and everything?
I don't know. There's a difference. Nobody ever saw anything with Mergen.
Can you stop her from doing it?
Spooking you out?
In the sense that I'm scared she'll go out and get help, sure.
Oh. I didn't think about that.
Do think about it, Goblin. What about the White Crow? Could she be the White Crow?
I thought Mergen was the White Crow.
He knew better. Mergen's here, being Sarah's recon slave.
It wouldn't be the first time Mergen was in the same place, looking at things from two different times.
He tells me he can't remember being the Crow.
Maybe that's because he hasn't done it yet. Maybe it's a Mergen from next year or something.
I did not know what to say to that. That possibility had not occurred to me, and Mergen had done that sort of thing before.
On the other hand, personally, I don't think it's Mergen or the brat.
He grinned his big toad grin. He knew I would stub my toe on that. I did.
What? You little rat. Who is it, then?
He shrugged.
I got a couple ideas, but I'm not ready to talk about them yet. You got the annals. All you need to follow my reasoning is right in there.
He began giggling, pleased with himself for stumping the analyst at her own game, so to speak.
Ha ha!
He spun around, dancing.
Let's go beat up on Narayan Singh. Oh, look who's here. Swan, you're too damned old to wear your hair that long. Unless you're going to comb it all up on top there to kind of cover the thin spot.
I held a finger above Goblin's dome, pointing down. He had not had a crop come in during my lifetime. Swan said,
Kind of looks like your widow's peak is sagging back a little, too. Probably comes from banging your head on the bottoms of so many tables.
Swan looked at me, an eyebrow raised.
He been in the ganja or something?
No. He just hasn't gotten over the fact that he went toe-to-toe with your girlfriend and came out ahead on points. Swan had suggested a good point indirectly, though. With hemp such a common weed, it was a wonder that Goblin and One Eye had not gotten in on the entertainment side of that crop. Goblin understood what I was thinking without me saying a word. He told me,
We don't have anything to do with it because it screws up your head.
And that water buffalo urine you brew back there doesn't?
That's pure medicine, Sleepy. You ought to try it. It's chock full of stuff that's good for you.
My diet is just fine, Goblin. Except for the fish and the rice.
That's what I'm saying. We take up a collection, buy us a pig. Never mind what Sarah says. There ain't nothing sweeter than some fatback and beans.
Swan had invited himself to accompany us in our 70-foot trek to Narayan's cage. He said,
I'll kick in on that myself. I haven't tasted bacon in over 20 years.
Shit, Goblin said. You're going to kick in? Man, you don't even have a name anymore. You're dead.
I could run up to the palace, dig around under my mattress. Times haven't been all bad for me.
You won't marry me, Sleepy, Goblin said. And you ought to marry Swan. He's got a hoard put back, and he's too damned old to bother you with any of that man stuff. Narayan Singh! Get your skinny, shit-smelling ass up from there and talk to me!
Swan whispered.
Survival must be a real powerful drug.
I expect it is when you're goblin's age, I agreed.
I guess it is at any age.
Meaning? I asked.
Meaning, I guess I should have headed back north a long time ago. I got nothing going for me here. I should have started moseying when Blade and Cordy went down, but I couldn't. And it wasn't just Soulcatcher twisting my arm. I'm a loser. We were all losers, all three of us.
We couldn't even make it as soldiers in the old empire. We deserted. Blade got his ass thrown to the crocodiles for smarting off to the priests back in his home country. We never had no real startup, any of us. Me and Cordy only headed on down here because once we got to running, it took a long time to stop. Now I don't have my friends anymore. I don't have anybody to goose me into doing things. I did not enlighten him about the health of Blade and Mather, who were among the captured, but I did point out, "You can't be entirely inadequate. You've had some kind of commission or other from the Taglian throne practically since you got here."
"I'm an outsider. I make a great fall guy. Everybody knows who I am, and everybody can recognize me. So the Protector or the Radisha puts me out in front where I can take the heat for all their unpopular decisions.
Now they'll need to find somebody else."
"Don't give me that look. I wouldn't join the Black Company if you promised to marry me and make me captain, too. You guys got doom written all over you."
"What do you want?"
"Me? Since I don't got the stones or the young body to go home anymore, and home wouldn't be there when I showed up anyway, what I'd like to do is what we tried to do when we first came down here. Set me up a little brewery. Spend my last few years making people's lives a little easier."
"I'm sure Goblin and One Eye would be happy to take on a partner."
"Them too? No way. They'd drink up half the product. They'd get drunk and get in a fight and start throwing the barrels at each other."
He had a point. "You have a point. Though they've shown considerable self-control lately.
It helps you pay attention if your fuck-up will get you killed. I'm always surprised by this guy."
He meant Narayan Singh.
"He looks like such a trivial little wart. There are 10,000 that look just like him out there on the streets right now. And not one will ever do anything more important than starve to death."
"If I thought it would do any good, I'd starve this one to death, too."
"Narayan, I'm back. Are you going to talk to me today?"
Singh raised his eyes. He seemed serene, at peace. That could be said for stranglers. They never had trouble with their consciences.
"Good morning, young woman. Yes, we can talk. I took your advice. I went to the goddess, and she approved your petition. Frankly, I was surprised. She set down no special conditions for making a bargain, other than that the lives and well-being of her chief agents remain unimpaired."
Swan was more taken aback than I was.
"You got the right guy here, Sleepy?"
"I don't know. I figured they'd still try to weasel a little even after they couldn't stall anymore." This required a little thought, or a lot of thought, and maybe some worry.
"I'm definitely pleased, Narayan. Definitely. Where's the key?"
Narayan smiled, a smile almost as ugly as One Eye's.
"I'll take you to it."
"Aha," I murmured. "I see. The first shoe drops. Fine. When will you be ready to travel?"
"As soon as the girl recovers. You may have noticed she's been sick."
"Yes, I did. I thought it must be her time of the month."
A horrible thought occurred to me.
"She's not pregnant, is she?"
The look on Singh's face told me that notion was completely unthinkable to him.
That's good. But it doesn't matter, Narayan. As long as we're conspiring together, deceivers and black company, you two aren't going to be a team. It's a sad truth, Narayan Singh. But I just don't trust you. And her I wouldn't trust if she was in her grave.
He smiled like he knew a secret.
But you expect us to trust you?
Based on the well-known fact that once it has sworn a thing, the company always keeps its word, yes.
A slight exaggeration, of course. Narayan glanced at Swan for just a second. He smiled again.
I guess that's just going to have to be good enough for me.
I pasted on my most scintillating false smile.
Wonderful. We're in business together. I'll get some people ready for an expedition. Do we have far to go?
Smile.
Not far. Just a few days south of the city.
Ha! The Grove of Doom. I should have guessed.
I led Swan away. I rejoined the fellows at the card table. I want Singh's son brought in as soon as we can get him. It could not hurt to have a little extra ammunition.
Chapter 43. I don't know what to do with myself. Not having to work, Sarah told me. She and Tobo were huddled in front of the mist box, sharing what they could with Mergen. I was pleased to see mother and son getting along. I suggested, "There's always work for those who want to put out the buttons that'll remind everyone about us after we're gone. There's always something that needs lugging down to the river."
To paraphrase Goblin, I don't miss work so much I'm actually going to volunteer to do some.
Was there something?
The guys just brought in Singh's son. Good-looking fellow. They also brought in a couple of rescripts they found posted on the official announcement pillars, put up since the Radisha went into seclusion.
What do they say?
Mainly that she's willing to pay some pretty big rewards for information leading to the apprehension of any member of the gang of vandals masquerading as members of the long-defunct Black Company and causing public disorders.
Will anybody believe that?
If she says it often enough.
I don't care about her telling tall tales. I care about the reward offers. There are people out there who'd sell their mothers. She puts a couple of no-goods on the street throwing money around and bragging about how they cashed in. Somebody who really knows something might decide to bet the long odds.
Then why don't we just go?
There isn't that much more we can do here anyway, is there?
We can get Mogaba.
Let the world think that. Start a rumor. Start a bunch of rumors about the Great General and about the Radisha. While we evacuate.
When are you leaving to get the key?
I'm not sure. Soon. I'm stalling for time. So a message can get through to Slink.
Sarah nodded. She smiled.
Good thinking. Singh will have something up his sleeve.
Willow Swan suddenly invited himself to join us.
The girl is having some kind of a problem.
I scowled at him. Sarah did the same, but was polite enough to ask,
"The Daughter of Night? What kind of problem?"
I think she's having a fit. A seizure-like.
Perfect timing, I grumbled. At the same time, Sarah yelled for Tobo to get Goblin. I growled,
"What are you doing anywhere near her, Swan?"
He showed some color and said,
"Oh, you dumb mudsucker. Lady did you in. You panted after her for years. Then you put the screws to 12 million people by letting Lady's baby sister threaten to blow in your ear. Now you're going to let Lady's brat put a ring in your nose and make an even bigger idiot out of you?"
You really are stupid and pathetic, Swan.
I was just
thinking with something that isn't your brain. As though you're some dopey 15-year-old. This woman isn't some cute little virgin, Swan. She's worse than your worst nightmare. Come here. He came. I moved suddenly, violently, the way I had wanted to do so many times with my uncles. The tip of my dagger penetrated the skin underneath his chin. Do you really want to die a really stupid, humiliating, pointless death? Let me know. I'll arrange it. Without the rest of us having to pay the price again. One-Eye's cackle filled the air.
It's a wonder, Swan. You ought to think about her instead of your usual black widows.
He was in Do Trang's spare wheelchair again, but getting around under his own power. I could arrange something pointless and humiliating for you too, old man. He just laughed at me.
You invited the soldier Aridatha down here to meet his long-lost daddy, Sleepy. You ought to be dealing with him instead of here flirting with Swan.
He could be maddening at times, and he loved it. If he could find any kind of lever at all. I told Swan,
you explain to One-Eye what you mean about the girl. One-Eye, deal with it. Solve it.
Short of killing her. Sing won't give me the key if we kill the skinny little witch. Chapter 44
Darn. Aridatha Singh was almost enough to make me change my mind about swearing off men. He was gorgeous. Tall, well-proportioned, a beautiful smile that showed magnificent teeth, even when he was under stress. His manners were perfect. He was a gentleman in every sense but condition of birth. I told him,
Your mother must have been a marvel.
Excuse me?
Nothing, nothing. Around here I'm called Sleepy. You're Aridatha. That's enough of an introduction.
Who are you people?
Why am I here?
He did not bluster or threaten. Amazing. Few Taglians ever recognize that as a waste of time. It isn't necessary for you to know who we are. You're here to meet a man who is also our prisoner. Don't mention the fact that you'll be released after your interview. He won't be. Come with me. Moments later, Aridatha Singh remarked,
You're a woman, aren't you?
I was the last time I checked. We're here. This is Narayan.
Narayan, get up. You have a visitor. Narayan, this is Aridatha, as promised.
Aridatha looked at me, trying to understand. Narayan stared at the sun he had never seen and saw something there that made him melt just for an instant. And I knew that I could reach him if I could keep it from looking like I was asking him to betray Kina. I stepped back and waited for something to happen. Nothing did. Aridatha kept glancing back at me. Narayan just stared. Out of patience, at last, I asked Narayan,
Shall I send people to collect Kaditya and Sugriva as well? And their children too?
This threatened Narayan and told Aridatha that he had been abducted because he belonged to a particular family. I recognized the instant the truth occurred to him. There was an entirely different look in his eyes when he glanced back at me again. I said,
Not much good can be said about this man, from my point of view. But you can't call him a bad father. Fate never gave him the chance to be good or bad.
Except to the girl, for whom he had done everything possible, to her complete indifference.
He's very loyal.
Aridatha realized that this was not about him at all. That he was a lever meant to get some kind of movement out of Narayan Singh. The Narayan Singh, the infamous chief of the Strangler cult. Aridatha won my heart all over again when he squared up his shoulders, stepped forward and offered his father a formal greeting. There was no warmth in it, but it was absolutely proper.
I watched them try to find some common ground, some point at which to start. And they found it quickly enough. We had not found any evidence, ever, to disdain Narayan Singh's affections for his Lily. Aridatha thought quite highly of his mother.
The man's a piece of work, isn't he?
I was startled. I had not heard a sound, but Riverwalker was behind me. River did not have much talent for light-footing it, which left me with the perfectly scary notion that Aridatha Singh really was having an effect on me.
Yes, he is, and I don't quite know why. Well, I'll tell you. He reminds me of Willow Swan, a bedrock decent guy, only smart, and still young enough to be unspoiled by life. River! You should hear yourself talk. You're halfway intelligent. Don't mention it in front of the guys. One eye will figure out why he can't cheat me at Tonk more than half the time.
He considered Aridatha again. Pretty, too. Better keep him away from your librarian. They'll elope on you. Another broken heart.
You think? What kind of clues?
I don't know. I could be wrong.
When does he have to be back? Can we keep him all night? You figuring on testing him out?
River did not usually rag me much, so I knew I had to be asking for it somehow.
No, not that way. The villain in me came up with an idea. We introduce him to the Radisha before we turn him loose.
Now you're matchmaking?
No. Now I'm showing a four-square guy that his ruler isn't in the palace. He can make the rumors credible, because he can tell the truth.
Couldn't hurt.
You keep an eye on those two here. I'll go talk to the woman.
Riverwalker raised an eyebrow. Nobody but Swan used that term to describe the Radisha anymore.
You're picking up bad habits.
Probably. Chapter 45. I found the Radisha lost inside herself. Not asleep, not meditating, just wandering around inside, probably feeling immensely guilty about having been relieved by her recent lack of stress. I felt a moment of compassion. She and her brother might be our foes, but they were sound people at heart. Rajadharma had been bred into them.
Ma'am?
She was due respect, but I could not use princely titles.
I need to speak to you.
She raised her